When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is the news.
Hello, everybody. It's the Football Ramble, of course, and it's our World Cup specials in association with history. We've got five of these World Cup specials. We started in the first one back in 1990 with Cameroon's outstanding defeat of world champions Argentina. And now we've reached the fifth and final instalment. These five World Cup specials are brought to you by History, who, in celebration of the World Cup, are broadcasting 24/7 football documentaries for 2 weeks, starting on Monday, 28th of May. And you can watch History on Sky, Virgin, BT, or TalkTalk. Gentlemen, we've been threatening it for the previous four episodes, of course. It's now time to talk about David Beckham sending off against Argentina at France 98.
I'm keeping quiet because I interrupted you last time and I got in a lot of trouble.
Well, David Beckham interrupted Diego Simeone's standing posture.
Yeah.
yes, a life-changing moment. In the life and times of David Beckham.
It was a life-changing moment for me. I don't know about David Beckham. Yeah. I took this very badly.
Indeed, yeah. Let's give a bit of background, as we do on these. Beckham, of course, put himself on the footballing map with his halfway line goal against Wimbledon in 1996. Now, he'd played a bit for Manchester United before then.
Well, they won the title in 95, but was he on loan somewhere else for a bit of that
Preston,
season?
Only for about a month, though.
Yeah, and he played a few games, didn't he?
Yeah, he played in the Champions League as well for Manchester United. But that was the moment when everybody knew who he was and sort of started becoming a household name.
Do you remember some people saying he was poached? There was a lot of talk that he was poached from, I can't remember where
he was. Spurs?
Maybe West Ham. No, it was a small team. It was like a second division team. And they said, oh, he's poached. He started somewhere else, sort of thing.
Oh, is that right?
So that was the big thing with Beckham. I just remember a joke on Fantasy Football League because Frank Skinner was eating a packet of crisps. He's like, oh, this is a smoky Beckham flavoured. And he went, oh, it tastes poached. That was the gag.
Wasn't he at a team called Brimsdown Rovers?
Let's see, that ring.
Yeah. But that was at a very young age. I mean, he famously, him and his father were Man United fans, or they probably still are, and he would travel up to Manchester, wouldn't he, from his home in Essex. The best ever fact about David Beckham, we've got to start off with this, is that David Beckham was born in Whips Cross Hospital.
And he loved a whipped cross.
And that's the joke, Marcus. You don't have to make it obvious.
Yeah.
That's the one.
That's the one.
I heard Zidane was born in Edebut. Which I guess but means goal.
He was born in Ballon d'Or. the goal he scores that you mentioned, the big lob against Wimbledon, that's at the start of the season in 96, isn't
right,
it?
Yeah.
So he starts the season as he means to go on.
Very much.
And would you say then a star was born?
Yes, absolutely right.
It was the opening day, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what a way to start.
It was a third of a 3-0 win. I think Cantona had scored earlier. and they were off and running. But of course, a big part of the class of 92 with all those other Fergie fledglings, I think they were dubbed. And he was a beautiful boy, delightful hair, had the skills.
He
looked the business. Absolutely, absolutely. And he was, as you say, a star in the making. And it was at a time when the mood of the country, I mean, looking back on it, it seems rather naff and a bit silly. But the cool Britannia, Tony Blair was knocking around.
That was a massive part of it. I think when Tony Blair came into power in 1997, to me, as a 16-year-old, it felt like, right, I knew nothing about politics. Yeah, I mostly still don't. But I knew nothing about politics then. But it felt like it wasn't actually about politics. It was about a whole wave of new optimism.
That's
right. And it felt like, of course, when you're an adult and you realise it's all cynical anyway and the whole world is cynical, you think, oh, Noel Gallagher's going to number 10, David Beckham, and everything is cool. It's great to be British.
The good guys are winning.
And it was a big...
You're right.
We have to remember, we were on the football-wise, we stick to what we know for a bit, football-wise, was on the crest of a wave internationally because of England's showing at Euro 96, which everyone was really happy about.
Well, the national pride was restored in the England football team after that tournament.
We went into France 98 thinking we might win it, You know, and it's silly if England approach a tournament now and talk about maybe winning it. But back then, after that showing at Euro 96,
very much so,
and with some of those players that had come through, it wasn't silly.
Yeah. England.
Well, it was, but it didn't seem it.
Well, it wasn't ridiculous, I think. I mean, yes, of course, you look at the quality of the other sides in there, you know, the Dutch and the French and the Brazilians and so on. But still, England had a good side. And in a qualifying group with Italy, Poland, Georgia and Moldova, the qualifying was probably more competitive back then. England tend to sort of breeze through, but it's a bit more straightforward than what it was, you could argue. But international football was much more keenly followed. The Champions League hadn't quite become the sort of behemoth that it is now. Still very important, still very glamorous. But international football was still considered the top level. And England under Glenn Hoddle, of course, a young manager himself, was starting to look good. They were playing a 3-5-2 and of course found themselves in a position only needing a point in Rome in their last game. And England famously drew 0-0 that night. Beckham played in a midfield three of, I think it was him, Ince and Gascoigne, which was a brilliant midfield three. I mean, my goodness.
Happy with that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Very important.
I probably was happy with it at the time. I can't remember.
I think I was as well. A very important player in qualifying. Graham Lasso.
Oh, lovely.
Wing back.
There we go.
I think your mate Wrighty played as well, Pete, didn't he?
Yeah, up front.
Yeah.
He was up front that caps. Day.
I remember him celebrating like a madman.
I think he got, was he 33 caps?
Yeah.
He did okay.
He never played, he didn't play at the World Cup.
Sadly not. Yeah. He never played because he got injured. Although, of course, he has 100% hit rate in tournaments for England. Le tournoi.
Yeah, indeed.
lest we forget. Beckham played a bit more of a central midfield role. He was sometimes out right for Manchester United, but could play in the centre and became a starter for club and country. And he started dating Posh Spice, Victoria Adams, of course. The media were lapping it up. And to be fair, so was he, really. I mean, I wouldn't say he was a natural one in front of the cameras.
No, but
so
what
on.
Dogged him throughout the early part of his career was these accusations that he loved the attention, the limelight, the fame.
Being as a celebrity.
As much, if not more, than being a football player. Mm. And of course, his later career, he turned everyone around. Everyone loved him. All the players he played with loved how hard he trained. The managers loved him. He proved a few of them wrong over the years. Mm-hmm. But at this point, there was an undercurrent of hate. Well, you know, obviously, we don't talk about hashtag haters back then, but there was an undercurrent of that, which came to the fore after what happened.
It was usually, a little bit of it.
Hugely, and also like the way that he adopted a certain management system. I mean, like as in media management, like he got a lot of sponsorships very early on.
Yeah.
As well, he might do because he's a Premier
League. But that was quite a rare thing then.
Rarer thing, certainly. And I think at that point, we've sort of grown up with him as being like a brand and also a footballer. And now he's kind of just a brand as this kind of like, you know, proud father, kind of international ambassador for football and stuff like that. So we're a little bit more comfortable with his legacy than his nascent burgeoning one back then.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right. And at that time, you know, you talked about the sponsorships and all. Football was going through a slightly different period. It was emerging as this very glamorous, very fashionable thing. The Premier League had exploded or was exploding. Football now, huge money, glamour, so on and so forth.
Who do you want in your Brill Cream? John Walk?
Exactly.
Ryan Kilcline.
But this is it.
He had a lot of hair to
the killer.
Keep in,
you get for a lot of
keep
it,
in
yeah.
check.
But football, after the Premier League came about and so on, it did become more fashionable in this country and became more sexy, I suppose you could say.
Put it in a sarong.
I know, eh? but he became English football's pin-up.
Yeah.
The girls loved him. Mm. He was dating a Spice Girl and so on.
And when you say that you mentioned that he played in that key qualifier against Italy in Rome, am I right in saying that from memory that around this sort of time, when England played their warm-up friendlies to go into the World Cup, and obviously when the World Cup started, Beckham wasn't in the first game or two, which we'll probably come on to. At that point, there was talk that Hoddle thought that he was a bit too big for his boots and he didn't really like him. But Hoddle thought that about a lot of players, to be fair.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was.
That's interesting as well, isn't it? Because Hoddle was that sort of player himself.
Massively.
That's exactly why, I think.
Looks weird shoes.
Well, I wonder.
Red
boots. This is the thing with all the media attention Beckham was getting, and we cannot forget. And very importantly, extremely good young talent, for crying out loud. A very promising young footballer, scoring great goals now, potential world beater. Glenn Hoddle, I think, rightly or wrongly, he said that Beckham had his, you know, he was being influenced perhaps from other things and he wasn't as focused on the tournament as he should have been.
And Glenn Diamond Lights Hoddle.
Yeah. Well, and he publicly criticised Beckham around this time. And I think there was a moment in training, in England training, where Hoddle told Beckham he wasn't good enough to do a particular skill or something. And Beckham doesn't talk particularly nicely about Hoddle in his book. And Hoddle was seen in training. Hoddle still thought he was a bit, he was the man, really, and would often say, "Right, lads, this is how you do this."
Right, yeah,
but
yeah.
He, of course, he could still play
England
a bit.
Training.
I know. Yeah. It's class, isn't it? But Hoddle was seen as possibly one of the finest passers of the ball England have ever produced. Mm. Then along comes Beckham, and who people were talking about him in those kind of terms. There was a little bit of a clash there, right. quite clearly. And as a result, of that, again, rightly or wrongly, it's interesting to try and read into it. Hoddle left Beckham out of the starting 11 for the first two games. Now, many people were saying he should have been right wing back instead of Darren Anderton, but actually others were saying he should have been in that centre three because it was Ince and Batty behind Scholes. In the second game,
poor old Paul Scholes.
Poor old Paul
shunted
Scholes.
Around.
Finally gets a little slot in the middle.
Yeah.
And then even then they're saying, no. He shouldn't be in there.
He played in his preferred position for three tournaments for England, yeah. And people still say he didn't, but there we are.
Okay.
Beckham came on against Romania, and Beckham and Owen both came on and made a bit of a difference, even though England lost the game. And then against Colombia in the final game, he got his start, and he got his first goal for England. He was being rumoured to be a bit of a free-kick specialist.
I watched that goal and that game. It at the wettest ever Glastonbury Festival.
Oh.
In a massive field.
I remember the one.
On a huge big screen. And I was so cold, even though it was June, I couldn't really feel my arms. And when he scored, I was happy, but I couldn't really move. But I think there's a stat that said that more people watched it in that field at Glastonbury than were actually at the game.
Right.
So I was in a good atmosphere, I guess.
You were part of it, mate.
I was. Mm.
They
yeah,
couldn't say that stat
cool,
if it wasn't for people like you.
Cool, muddy Britannia.
Yeah,
cool
exactly.
Cool Luke Moore. Mm. Cold Luke Moore.
Summer of 1998, eh?
Cold yeah. Hands Luke.
So then England obviously went through and played Argentina in the next round. And by then, Beckham was seen as not only a starter, but one of the crucial figures in that England team.
One of the hopes. If you get a free kick in a good position, we've got a secret weapon. Like, but it's not secret, it's really famous.
Just a weapon. Yeah. It's always handy to have a weapon.
That was the...
in some context.
That was the last time he was droppable.
Yes.
Like that was the last time, every other matchup. Well, you got to play him. You got to play him for the rest of your career now.
Indeed.
Until you hit LA Galaxy.
But he played his way into the squad, essentially, which he deserves credit for.
No mean feat. It wouldn't be the first time, of course. It would be perhaps the first time, but it wouldn't be the last time that he changed a manager's mind. We're going to talk about the Argentina game, of course, after this.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to this World Cup special in association with History, where we're looking back at David Beckham's red card against Argentina at the 1990 World Cup in France. That England side was full of household names again. I mean, David Seaman, Gary Neville, Tony Adams, Sol Campbell, Paul Ince even. Obviously
Michael Beckham, Owen, Alan Shearer.
Alan Shearer, yeah. Teddy Sheringham. It was a brilliant team. And you mentioned it earlier, Jim, they believed that they could go far in the tournament, and they did have the talent to do it. But unfortunately, they came against a very good Argentina side. Mm. First time against Argentina since 1986. And the rivalry was still very much there.
And I think I sometimes catch myself thinking, oh, we were a bit unlucky in 98. The same I think we were a bit unlucky in 2002. When you look back to the knockout phase of World Cup 98.
It's ridiculous.
Look at the path England would have
absolutely.
To win it. They would have had to have beaten Argentina, Netherlands, when they were good, Brazil, and then the host nation France.
It would have been far too much. I mean, Argentina were then knocked out by the Netherlands. The Netherlands were then knocked out by Brazil. Brazil were then beaten by France. So there was no way. But it was an epic battle. It really was. If you watch that game, you'll never forget it. We didn't have to take long for the action to get underway. Three goals in the first 20 minutes. Beckham played Owen through for that second goal, and at halftime, 2-2. Poised for another half of scintillating football
mayhem.
Few minutes after half time, then the moment came which changed David Beckham's life forever. Really, kicked out at Simeone, and the referee, much to
Simeone goes for the back of him. Get it right. Yeah. Simeone goes for the back of him.
Yeah,
and it's on the halfway line pretty much, and it's a DA. For people listening who remember Diego Simeone as a manager, as a player, he was very much as aggressive as he is now.
Yeah, but he just wasn't doing it in a nice black suit.
No, exactly.
He's also as canny.
Yeah, well, quite. But he goes and he proves that shortly afterwards, because he goes for the back of Beckham. It's a standard issue foul. These days, you probably get a yellow for that, for going for the back of it. I don't think. Oh no, he did get a yellow, didn't he? I think he did get booked for that.
He certainly
got booked for his part in the incident.
Yeah,
I don't know if it was. I can't really remember if it was for the tackle or for the incident, but he was definitely booked anyway. Beckham flicks a foot at him. Beckham's lying prostrate on the floor on his front, and he flicks a foot out at Simeone, who mimics a staggering backwards and falling on the floor. Now, as you rightly say, Marcus, Kim Milton Nielsen, the Danish referee, who I think got a decent amount of stick in the aftermath of this as well, thanks to our glorious British press, he takes a while to go into the back pock, as you would say, Marcus, back pock decision, pulls out the red card, sends Beckham off. Beckham goes off, looks instantly gutted. I am putting this out there around this table now, and I know certainly at least one person in this room doesn't agree. That was not a red card. It was not a red card kick out.
I mean, the Argentinian players certainly made sure the referee got the red card out.
But the referee sees the entire incident. Right, he sees the entire thing.
You don't get red cards for insolence. It was a kick out. But
was it aggressive?
Was it dangerous? Were you endangering anyone with doing that?
Yeah, but the problem is he's allowed the referee to make that decision.
Yeah.
And that's where it is.
Because there's rules about raising your arms, presumably. Or there's an agreement, the violent conduct.
If the referee sees that as violent conduct, it's off the ball, it's a kick out. Beckham has gone to kick him. Now,
Just cut in, Marcus. Sorry, Pete, you also need to understand, this is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
The laws are completely different now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this violent conduct still exists.
I mean, but it's not a stamp, it's not an elbow, it's not a punch.
By the
letter
of the law, though, I mean, it's been interpreted as effectively the same as Zidane headbutting Materazzi. You know what I mean? It's been treated as if it's the same.
But Jim, you don't know what the letter of the law was in 1998.
No, but what I'm saying is that is how it was viewed, wasn't it, by the referee? He has seen it as like, this is an off-the-ball violent incident, so it has to be...
He's viewing the entire incident from start to finish. There's nothing he doesn't see about it. It's not like Zidane thing as far as he didn't see it.
That's not what I'm saying.
No, I know you're not. I'm not saying you are.
Enough people will think of it as a red card, and the problem is Beckham gave the referee that decision to make. I can't really blame the referee there.
Yeah, it was a very, very petulant decision.
Very silly
and
thing
also,
to do.
The sad thing is it vindicated a lot of what those people that were saying he was a bit of a fancy Dan thought about him.
Yeah,
and
that's what I was saying. What was bubbling under earlier.
And also. Yeah. In a previous one of these World Cup specials, we talked about Zidane having that nasty streak. For a time, Beckham had a petulant streak.
Yeah,
he did, and I think he eradicated it, you know, a few years later or whatever. But he did have that, and it was a little bit of a problem.
Well, he had that kind of thing where he wanted the ball so he could whip it up the field, but to get it, he would happily go through the back of players all the time. He wasn't the best challenger of the ball world.
I think he spent a good part of his early career with a bit of a chip on his shoulder, personally. And I'm speaking as a big fan of his, and I was throughout this, and I am now.
Yeah.
But I think, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, because he wants to do well and all the rest of it, but I think he had a bit of a chip on his shoulder. And I think if we can't agree on the red card, that's cool, but the what followed from not just from the press, which everyone knows about, but from Glenn Hoddle as well, was... It's probably looking back on now as negligent.
Of course, England lost on penalties. Beckham took all the blame. And Beckham said in a documentary afterwards, I think it was Alan Hansen did the documentary, and he was just talking to Beckham. It was maybe a year or two after or however long. And he said, "What did Glenn Hoddle say to you after the game?" And he went, he didn't speak to me.
No.
He went, "Did he not say anything?" He just went, "No."
Yeah.
Wow. And I think it was Tony Adams who said, he just like grabbed Beckham and just said, "We all make mistakes, son, don't worry," and tried to kind of console him.
Mm. And Ferguson called him and said, according to his autobiography, anyway, called him and said, get yourself to Manchester as soon as you can.
Yeah.
You'll be fine here.
Yeah. Mm. And Manchester, you're right, became his kind of safe haven, really.
Oh, absolutely.
The Daily Mirror printed a dartboard with his face on it, and an effigy of him was hung outside a pub in London, which was widely reported in the press as well. And that the tabloid media in particular treated him with the same language and the same sort of aggressively vitriolic campaign that they treat actual murderers with. Mm-hmm. The treatment was exactly the same. And people really bought into it. And it became this thing within football, wasn't it? That you would, if David Beckham was in town at your club, you'd give him loads of stick. You would abuse him and shout at him. Loads of chants about his wife. All those sort of things.
It was an absolute disgrace. And when you describe it like that, it makes me angry.
Yeah.
It really does make me angry thinking about it. I don't...
That's in the British psyche, though, isn't it?
Yeah, we build them up,
knock them down, and laugh when they're...
The front page of one of the tabloids, it might have been... I think it was
The Mirror. 10 lines and 1 stupid boy.
Yeah, 10 brave lines, 1 stupid boy.
It was The Mirror, yeah. The media and so many football fans across the country were an absolute disgrace. But
the way Man United handled that situation, I think they deserve immense credit for it, because they made it a real sanctuary for him. It was a fortress for them. Of course, he went on the next season to have a brilliant time. But that was in large part and he said this himself, was in large part thanks to the Man United family who looked after him. And the Man United fans were incredible with him as well.
That's right. And you know, it speaks volumes of the man. I remember actually Frank Skinner. We mentioned, you know, Badil and Skinner, of course, and fantasy football and so on. And I remember Frank Skinner looking down the barrel of the camera and saying, look, David, I'm sure you're not watching this, but just in the off chance you are, try and get this out. You're one of our best young players. You know, come back strong. And he actually gave him a supportive message, which was good to see. Nice. Manchester United played Leicester City at home at the start of the new season after the World Cup. And Beckham scores a superb free kick in that game to rescue a point for them in injury time. And the way he celebrates, he's quite passionate and so on. And it just testified to... He was a man who was not going to just go quietly away. And the season after that World Cup, Manchester United win the treble. Beckham wins the Champions League. And he's a big part of that team. He could have shrunk. He could have been so affected
by that.
You're
absolutely right. And how many players can we sit here and think of... I'm not suggesting we do it. It'd be quite boring. But how many players could we sit here and think of that would have wilted and disappeared... Under a fraction of that pressure.
And understandably so.
And how many have? How many have? How many players, professional players, and we're not denigrating them because it's a tough job to get into.
You can't blame someone if they're affected by that.
How many players whose careers have disappeared after a breakthrough season or doing quite well because they've had a minor not setback and it's never been right for them after? No one that I would say in English football... Injuries is a slightly separate issue, but in English football, in terms of a cultural challenge, no one has dealt with anything like what David Beckham dealt with in the summer of 98.
That is absolutely right, because we'd seen players vilified for missing penalties, which is, you know, very harsh, but the press would go to town on them in the same way.
Yeah, but they would feel sorry for them, though.
Yeah, but it would still happen, and you'd see managers, you know, turned into pictures of vegetables on the back of the tabloids. Yeah. It was part of the culture to really try and ruin people, to try and ruin our sportsmen, our footballers in particular. But this was the worst of it. Nothing even comes close to this in terms of how vitriolic it was. Yeah, to the point where I think even the tabloids learned to rein it in a little bit.
Yeah, well, they had to. I mean, it was ridiculous, but it speaks volumes of the man's character from how he dealt with all this. And he was back playing for England at Euro 2000. And you remember Euro 2000, and not a great tournament for England, but there were still sections of those England fans. I know England fans have disgraced themselves. Certain sections have disgraced themselves over the years. There were sections of the crowd who were still giving him stick.
Mm. Yeah.
Their own supporters. The mindset of that boggles. I don't want to go too into it. There's no point. But Beckham kept performing well.
I love England, but I just don't necessarily always like England.
I think a lot of other England fans share that view, sadly. But he kept performing for club and country, and we wouldn't have to wait much longer until everyone, and I do mean everyone, was back on his side. Of course, it was when England played Greece in that qualifier to clinch qualification for World Cup 2002. His performance will always be remembered, and the goal he scored at the end, and so on and so forth. And that was when all the doubters and dickheads came around to him, you know, of which there were so many in both of those camps. And the turnaround was remarkable. Thoroughly deserved it. Sadly, had to earn it. And the press, I think, gave him a standing ovation after the game when he walked through. And you sort of think to yourself, well, In a sense, well done. But in another sense,
that makes me think that something that I already knew, which is they've got a vastly inflated opinion of their own importance.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Yeah. And but again, it speaks volumes of Beckham. Beckham could have turned around and mouthed them all off and gone, "Oh, you're all applauding now, aren't you?
Yeah.
You lot have made my life a misery." He didn't.
Yeah.
Again, it shows the character and good grace of the man. No one in a professional sense. I've never met the man. I don't know what he's like behind closed doors.
He's definitely brilliant. Yeah. He's definitely amazing.
But so many people. I remember even Ibrahimovic at PSG said when Beckham arrived, and he was rather over the hill at the time, and Ibrahimovic just said, he's just such a great person.
At PSG, happened at Real Madrid when he was written off by the incoming manager, happened at Milan as well. Everyone has been bowled over by his professionalism. And in an interview in GQ in 2016, David Beckham, I think it would have been possibly around Euro 2016, David Beckham was asked to give his top five career moments.
Mm-hmm.
And he put the sending off against Argentina in there. He said, "I know people are going to be surprised, but this is the moment that made me not only the player but the man as well.
Amazing.
And I wouldn't have had the career I've had if it wasn't for it." And it just goes to show you how, as Jim said in the last one of these we did, it's not necessarily the great moments that you learn anything about yourself at all. You know, like Jim said last time, it's not the punches to the head that soften the fire; it's the pats on the back. It's the courage. It's the courage to have your convictions and to double down, to go, "You know what? This is not going to beat me. This is going to be the making of me, and I'm going to come out of this." And in adversity, you learn the most about yourself.
And seeing him score that penalty against Argentina in 2002.
That was so cathartic.
Oh, my goodness. And to step up and take it and go, "No, I'm going to take responsibility," and all that kind of stuff. And he was captain of the side and so on and so forth. Played at the World Cup in 2006.
Yeah.
And would have been at South Africa if it weren't for injury, of course. But again, how many times has he kind of bounced back, you know, from being told he, you know, wasn't in the England manager's mind after the World Cup 2006, gets back in the team, got his head down and worked hard. And then at Real Madrid, after signing for LA Galaxy at the end of the season, Fabio Capello dropped him saying he would play again. Beckham trained even harder. Capello changed his mind.
Oh, that's what I meant. Not the incoming manager. It was when he announced he was leaving, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Capello said that.
That's right. Yeah. And he played a big part in Madrid winning the league that way. I mean, this is a man that you cannot keep down. And, you know, we've all mentioned it, that now we remember people think of Brand Beckham as, you know, an aftershave or something like that. But actually, he was an incredible footballer.
And just to finish off, people would regularly have that debate about, "Oh, is David Beckham just a celebrity? Is he any good, really, and this sort of stuff?" One, he was brilliant. Mm. And two, you missed the point. Because he wouldn't be in a position to be a big celebrity if he wasn't a brilliant football player.
Exactly.
If he starts getting left out of teams, and all of a sudden he's playing for, you know, Preston North End again, with respect to them, he's not going to have his own brand of aftershave. Mm. No one who plays in League One, with the exception possibly of Lee Trundle, has got their own brand of aftershave.
So Akinfenwa's got one, well, yeah, right, probably. Far down the
one
league.
One thing feeds the other, and don't ever forget, for people who are too young to watch him as pomp, don't ever forget how good a player he was. Technically brilliant, brilliantly hardworking, very, very good with vision technique. Some of his passing, we talked about this a little bit when we did a little thing on the Ramble a couple of Mondays ago. You think of Beckham, you see that silhouette of him striking the ball from a wide area to whip into the box. His passing from the centre of the pitch through to a striker or to pick out a teammate was every bit as good. He had so much in his locker, Beckham. And because he wasn't that quick, I think he's actually probably a little bit underrated as a player. Mm. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can take any player who played with him word for it.
Mm. Absolutely right. Absolutely right, gentlemen.
Good on him. What a story. What a redemption story, and one that's richly deserved. And if you like that chat of Beckham and one or two other players that we've had, check out Three Musketeers, France 98, available on History Tuesday, 29th of May from 9 p.m. And FIFA Films presents France 1998, Tuesday, 5th of June from 7 p.m.
There we are. We've come to the end, gentlemen, of our World Cup series. Of course, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much to listening to this, our final Football Ramble World Cup special in association with History. Our five World Cup specials are brought to you by History, who, in celebration of the World Cup, are broadcasting 24/7 football documentaries for 2 weeks, starting on Monday, 28th of May. You can watch History on Sky, Virgin, BT or TalkTalk. Gentlemen, a pleasure going down World Cup memory lane.
Indeed.
Is there a finer lane? Perhaps not.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.